Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It's the Dopey Millennial Show with you on this Thursday afternoon. Happy New Year. Man, Texas Tech, it's just not their day. The Red Raiders get into the red zone, and we have just seen another Texas Tech turnover. Honestly, I can't believe it. I mean, it's three fumbles today, and then Baron Morton just threw his second interception of the day in the end zone. It looks like, I mean, look, they're still, what, 13 minutes, nearly 14 minutes of time on the clock, so I can't absolutely say it's over, but in this game, how it's being played so far, for Oregon to be up 13-0 feels like they might as well be up 28-0. Just a massive, massive letdown for a Texas Tech team that obviously had been so much fun for a lot of people to keep up with, had a Heisman candidate in Jacob Rodriguez, but it feels like that defense doing their part. It felt like for a lot of this day, but the offense not nearly enough. And just fumbling twice in this game for both. Well, as Baron Morton had one of them, Cameron Dickey the other, and then two interceptions for Morton. One is in the end zone against Oregon. And it looks like the theories ablaze about whether or not the bye is a true problem for teams in the college football playoff, something we will talk later in the show coming up at 3:40 as to whether or not the college football playoffs are broken because of this. But right now, I want to continue our Hawks conversation, go out to the waitfor.com hotline and bring in my buddy Brad Rowland, host of Locked On Hawks. Brad, the Hawks get a big-time win last night over the Timberwolves, 126-102. It snaps a seven-game losing streak, one that when I asked Kristaps Porzingis about last night, he was surprised. He didn't realize it had gotten so bad in his timeout. Before we get to him, though, which is more of who this team is this season? The team that can beat the Timberwolves by double digits, or a Hawks team that goes on a seven-game losing streak?
Yeah, I mean, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. I would lean toward the team who is at least capable of playing like the way they did yesterday. Like I was saying pretty much throughout the seven game losing skid that this team is not as bad as that. I mean, yeah. I think everyone would rationally understand that. Now, not everyone's rational when you're losing that often, which I totally understand. But I mean, we've seen throughout, I mean, even beyond this season, like the Hawks have been able to kind of be giant killers at times over the last couple seasons. Their highs are pretty high. It's a consistency issue has been kind of the case for a couple of years now, and I think so far this season has been the same thing. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. I think this season in particular, you mentioned Porzingis being playing with one center for basically a month was very, very costly for this team. So that's one reason. But yeah, I would certainly lean toward at least having the ability to play the way they did yesterday as a more indicative of where they actually should be.
You mentioned the, you know, not getting the highs being high. It made me think of something that we hear from Trae Young quite often of not wanting to get too high, not wanting to get too low. Unfortunately, you know, the Hawks kind of find themselves in that position quite often. Trae not able to play last night, second straight game that he's out with his right quad contusion. Brad, this comes after him missing 7 weeks after he messes up his knee with Mo Gay falling into him. Does the injury issues for Trae, are they a real issue now, especially as we are in final, year of his contract? The trade buzz is really, really loud right now. Obviously, is that tend to happen when a team starts losing. But does the injury side of things for Trae really start to concern you yet?
I wouldn't say so. I think without knowing, and maybe we'll learn more when the injury report comes out today for tomorrow's game, but, you know, because it's on the same leg, the contusion's on the same leg as the knee, I wonder if they're being a little bit more cautious than anything else. That's just speculation on my part, nothing beyond that. But, you know, it's on one hand, it's a guy who's been extremely durable his whole career, like to the point where it was notable how durable he was But also, you know, when you get older, as small as he is, like, it does make sense that you might become a little bit less durable as you get older. So perhaps this is part of that as well. But you mentioned the way that the first knee injury happened was kind of a fluke. It wasn't like he did anything weird or that was like a wear and tear injury. He just, a guy fell into him. And that happens in the NBA, unfortunately, sometimes. But, you know, there are questions about Trae Young's future in Atlanta, and there should be. I think there was always going to be a pivot point in the next 6 months somewhere because of the contractual situation. Like, when your deal is what it is and you're either going to expire or you have a player option, it's like the time where things kind of pivot in the league. But as far as the injuries are concerned, like, it's definitely hurt his situation this season because he was just out for so long and they played for so long without him and also had some decent success without him, and that kind of spun things in certain directions. But as far as like his durability concern, I'm not quite worried about that yet. If he has two or three more injury absences, then he starts to get a little bit louder. But for now, it's kind of just, at least for me, for kind of a one-off on the injury front.
Talking with Brad Rolen, host of Locked On Hawks, on the waitfor.com hotline. It's fun. As someone who covers the Hawks, getting to talk to someone else who covers the team, it's fun because I get to ask Brad all the questions that you hate getting asked yourself. But Brad, I think, you know, one of them that is on a lot of people's minds is just how different this team looked last night when Kristaps Porzingis is available. And even in a limited span, you're only able to play 17 minutes, but scores 16 points in that amount of time. This team looked completely different. It feels like the guy, you know, that they truly like, who they traded for. How much do you think the KP can be counted on? Or do you kind of expect his name to be another one remaining in trade rumors just because of this whole, Potts issue that he's been dealing with, that he's worked his way back after the team shut him down?
Yeah, it's really fascinating because you don't want to ever overweight one game, but the theory of the case with Porzingis was very apparent in the game against Minnesota, where he's coming back from injury, illness. And because of that, he was certainly on a minutes restriction. They didn't say that, but I think it was pretty clear he was. And because of that, he was able to kind of play freely and play hard. And I think you saw his defense play up a little bit because he wasn't playing as many minutes. And he had extra energy. Like, as much as that might sound crazy coming off the illness, he probably was fresher than everybody else was because he hasn't played in the game in 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And he looked great. I mean, he looked exactly like you would want him to look. He was defensively impactful. The shooting's always impactful, offensively, all that stuff. And importantly, that allows them to not have to overwork Okongwu, who's been doing yeoman's work for a month, but probably shouldn't be playing 36 minutes a night like he has been for the last 4 weeks. So all the things come together, and that's like what you want to see. And it wasn't terribly surprising that they would look better with Porzingis. Like, that makes sense. He's one of the best players. Whether they can count on him or not is the ultimate question that basically no one can answer. I mean, maybe he can, maybe the team doctors can, but on the outside, like, I think it's, I roll my eyes sometimes with people saying that he'll never play again and all these things, which is clearly not true. He played last night. Like, we saw that. But also on the other side, like, you can't just suddenly declare he's back and going to have no issues. Like, this is a guy who's had a lot of missed games over a decade. So it's really hard for people like us to answer this question. I think that they need him. That's pretty evident. But how much he can play, how much he will play is certainly a big question. And because of the contract and that lack of durability, he kind of has to be at least somewhat in trade discussions. And not because of him, but mostly because he's a big expiring contract. So if you want to make any sort of like bigger move, like Anthony Davis has been discussed a lot, that's for, you know, whatever that is. That's just a good example of that. But anything that costs a lot of money in a trade, Porzingis is like the prime matching salary in a deal like that. So he's going to be out there, but I think the theory of the case with him playing was certainly evident last night.
When you have guys on expiring contracts, whether it's Trey, whether it's, you know, Kristaps Porzingis, whether it's Luke Kennard, it feels like those make sense when they come up in conversation. One that certainly surprised some people when his name was raised is second-year player Zachary Risacher, who I believe, Brad, I don't know if you agree, just had one of the more odd first-round pick entrances into the league because he joins a Hawks team trying to compete, trying to win, which means his development essentially takes a bit of a backseat. And it feels like, surprisingly, it's taken a backseat even more this season, and there's been talks of disappointment with how he's played. How do you kind of evaluate what Zach has looked like this season and kind of your, you know, whether you were surprised or not to see his name be included in, you know, hypothetical trades like we've seen with, Anthony Davis and the likes?
Yeah, I'm glad you put it that way about the situation that he came into. That's a big factor people, I would say, often overlook. Like, some guys got to go, like, rookies that are picked in the top five are often going, I would say, usually going to bad teams and playing 35 minutes a night and doing whatever they want to do, basically, and developing that way. That's one way to do it. Zach didn't have that option. And between that and the reality that he's being compared to number one overall picks, and while that's where he was drafted, no one in the league, no one in the basketball community viewed him as that level of prospect. It's not his fault that he was drafted number one in a class that didn't really have a normal number one overall pick. If he had been in the class with Victor or with Flagg or, you know, pick whatever guy you want, Zion, whatever, Luka, whatever, he wouldn't have been picked there. That's the reality, and that's not the level of player that he is. All that said, like, I think that people are a little bit silly with Risa right now. This is still a 20-year-old kid who has flashed quite a bit and was a productive player as a 19-year-old in the NBA and, like, has a good future. Is it going to be a star future? I would guess probably not, but that's kind of what I thought all along with Zach. The appeal of him is that he's a 6'9 forward that can dribble, pass, shoot, defend, and everyone in the league wants that player. So I would not give up on him at all. I think he's a quality prospect still who's young. On the trade thing, I was not shocked because the reality is, like, the league is probably lower on him now. The Hawks maybe too. People have kind of forgotten this. The Hawks had a front office change.
Yeah.
They drafted Zachary Richey. And that doesn't mean that Ansu Soleil doesn't like Richey. We don't know that by any means. But what it does mean is that he wasn't the one in the chair when they drafted him, which does matter. With that said, I got some significant pushback from front office folks when I asked about that report that he was available. The Hawks were not thrilled to have that report out there, I don't think. So whatever that means, could he be moved? Yes, he's not untouchable. Like, he's certainly behind the likes of Jalen and that Pelicans pick as far as, like, guys who could be traded. But the notion that he would be untouchable is also not the case right now, would be what I would say. I'd still be surprised if he got traded, but it's not, like, impossible to believe.
Brad, the Hawks go in to face the New York Knicks in their next game. The last time they faced the Knicks, we learned after that game in a very tough, close fight that ultimately the Hawks came up short in, that the Hawks had it wasn't necessarily called a players-only meeting, but that there was a players' meeting that took place where everyone was able to air their grievances, like this was Festivus or something. But when you hear that come out, I am inclined to cringe a bit just because usually when you hear players-only meeting, it's happening to a team that things are really, really not going well, and often players-only meetings don't tend to fix problems amongst teams. It felt like N'Keal, Jalen, I know I asked, I believe it was Lauren Williams, asked Luke Kennard about it last night. What is your take of players-only meetings, and kind of how do you see that affecting the Hawks moving forward?
Yeah, I tend to be on your side for the most part about, like, when you hear that, you kind of roll your eyes a little bit. I also think that it was pretty natural in the way that it's been described on the record, like all the things that you were in and I was in too, like people talking about, it wasn't like a planned meeting. They kind of just, like, stayed after the game and talked. And they had a back-to-back, and it was one of those things, like, they were just around and they talked, which is, I think, productive on some level. And also, they had lost five games in a row. Like, it wasn't like it was an odd time for it. They were really struggling and playing poorly, and they went 0-5 in the homestand and all these things. So it's kind of natural time for it to happen. I wonder if they wanted it to get out the way that it did. It did. Obviously, they talked about it pretty openly. But, look, the results, it was funny. The game after, once, as you alluded to, it came out the game afterwards. They lost that game, and a lot of the reaction was, well, it didn't work. They lost. And my take was the opposite. Like, they've played better.
Yeah.
Like, I know they lost that game, but, like, they clearly overachieved in that game. Like, they lost by a single possession to a team that's better than them. And then the next game, they went to Oklahoma City in a spot where they were, like, 1,000-point underdogs, and they almost won the game. So, like, and then they won the next game. So, like, they've played better since then. Does that mean that's the reason why they played better? I have no idea. It'd be silly to say that for sure that it is. But whatever was said seemed to have, I don't want to say worked, but it wasn't detrimental based on the results, at least recently.
That is Brad Rowland, host of Locked On Hawks. Give him a follow on social media at BT Rowland. Brad, really appreciate you joining us on this Thursday, and Happy New Year, man.
Happy New Year.
All right, we'll talk soon. On the other side of the break, let's get into a check the tape. One person I didn't ask Brad about, Luke Kennard, had a really impressive game last night. What did he say about the reason the Hawks played differently than their previous seven-game losing streak? We'll get into it next. Caleb Johnson here with you, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.